difficult as it is to imagine a virtual reality that we all enter into, we already have it.
It's just not as immersive as it is in the book.
Yeah, it just has a horrible interface. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog, episode 3 for Friday, April 25th, 2015. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we discuss virtual reality and how it's not as far off as you might think. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. We both recently read a book called Ready Player One by Ernest Klein, which is the best sci-fi book I've read in a long time, that's for sure.
Well, I think The Martian was probably better, but they completely do two completely different types of sci-fi.
Yeah, hard sci-fi versus fantasy.
Yeah.
So a massive portion of the book, Ready Player One, it centers around a virtual space called the Oasis, in which the characters, most of the book takes place inside of this virtual space, this virtual world.
Yeah, it's like Second Life on steroids or a giant, huge MMO. It's what I imagine the creators of Second Life wanted it to be when they made it. They were just about 30 years ahead of their time.
Exactly. Yep. And there are a lot of parallels inside of the book that you can see, like you can sort of stitch together things that are real now, trends and technology that are real right now that are going in that direction.
You could see things heading that way. It's like, it doesn't seem like it's not super far-fetched.
So let's describe a little bit of some of the stuff that is sci-fi, right? So what people do, if you imagine right now, if you imagine playing an online game, a multiplayer game, or even using Facebook, where you're either on your phone or your desktop, maybe you're on a console, and you are interacting in a virtual environment with other humans. So, you know, in the case of, I don't know, pick a game, Minecraft, you've all got these, you're not... It's 3D rendered on 2D, so it's 2D but with 3D perspective, and you've got your little guy and you can dress him up and you can run around and you can fight with other people or you can team up with other people or you can do races or parkour challenges. You know, it's just like, or Halo, people might be familiar with Halo, it's the same kind of thing. But that's all rendered on a screen, a two-dimensional surface. So in the book, in all of these, you know, the books in this genre like Neuromancer or Snow Crash, people are sort of, they almost all refer to it as jacked into the virtual space. In this case, it's called the Oasis. But what they're doing is they're not looking at a screen. They typically have, in this book, it's called a visor, but some kind of goggles.
Yeah, and there's some kind of headgear, or if you want to go really sci-fi, then they literally plug into it, but we don't have to go that far down the rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, Matrix style. So they've got always some kind of headgear that gives them a 3D space that reacts to the movements of their head. So like if you turn around, instead of like in Minecraft, you have to use the mouse to turn yourself around and you need to use keys to move forward and stuff like that. Instead of that, you just move your body around and the world revolves around you, so to speak, which I suppose is part of the attraction, right?
You're the center of the world.
Yeah. Center of yours anyway.
Yes.
So, but there's a whole bunch of gear that comes on top of that. So like the goggles are kind of like the table stakes. You have to have the goggles.
Yeah.
But they're also...
And then your next upgrade is the gloves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, haptic gloves, which allow you to feel like you're feeling stuff. So, you know, you can see something in front of you, reach out, and the game knows or the environment knows that you're touching it, so the glove will vibrate or do something to trigger your nerve endings in your hand to make it feel like you're actually touching something.
Yeah.
You can also use the gloves to manipulate things in space. But it doesn't stop there. That's just phase two. Then they also have full-body haptic suits that allow you to feel sensations all over.
And then the internet digresses to nothing but porn.
Yeah, that does come up at one point. But then there's haptic chairs and, you know, they're fully sort of like chambers, like fully haptic chambers. Not just, yeah, well, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, like there's your treadmill and
Yep, and like a chair that you strap yourself into. So if you're, say, flying a spaceship in the game, it will actually like dive and turn. And
yeah.
So
like all, really advanced simulators.
Yeah, super, super advanced. And all of that, it's all sci-fi. It's a sci-fi book, but nothing we just talked about doesn't already exist. All that stuff exists.
Yeah,
right
it
now.
Might not exist to that degree, but like we're getting the 3D goggles from various different mm-hmm. places. There's Oculus Rift. There's the one Sony's got. There's HoloLens. Samsung's got one. Yeah, we're getting a lot of those. The haptic stuff, we're starting to feel a lot more haptic feedback in pretty much all of our devices.
Yep.
And was,
what's that touch-free one called? There's like a hands-free haptic.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like Super Haptics maybe. I don't remember the name.
Oh, Ultra Haptics, yeah.
Ultra Haptics, that's it, yeah. And it uses, like somehow it vibrates the air around you and creates sound waves to make the haptic feedback.
Right, so you just move your hand in space and this invisible force it makes it feel like there's you're touching something. And the video is hilarious because it's invisible, so you can't see anything. So what they do is they just show the reaction videos of when people try it, and everybody goes, whoa!
Yeah, I'd love to try this.
Yeah, totally. So the haptic stuff is definitely already, the technology's there. Even the crazy stuff, like the treadmill, omnidirectional treadmill exists.
Yeah, and you take this stuff and then just like plug it into World of Warcraft, and there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can move your character around by actually running. Even the rooms that dive you around and stuff. There's a dozen rides at Disney that do exactly that.
Yeah, like a lot of this stuff exists. It's just really expensive and not at the consumer level yet.
Right, and so if you imagine, I thought it was really weird when Facebook bought Oculus Rift. Oculus Rift was the first immersion VR goggles that really seemed to catch on.
Yeah, but after reading this book, it makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah.
The whole time I was thinking, oh, man, Facebook's going to create this virtual environment.
Facebook has all. So if you think about Facebook for a second, first in Facebook, you've got a real strong identity, and Facebook currently exposes that to everyone else. It's part of the deal. You can't be anonymous on Facebook, or it's really hard to be anonymous on Facebook.
You have to lie to Facebook to do it.
Right. That's actually different than in the game. In the game, anonymity is incredibly important. And in fact, even in different parts of the game, so like you're anonymous in school.
Yeah, it's like 3D Reddit.
Yeah, it's more like 3D Reddit. Right. But Facebook is a platform in the same way that this Oasis is a platform, because there's games inside of Facebook that leverage your identity. And you have, I don't think Facebook has credits anymore, and there's certainly no inventory. But if you imagine like Facebook mashed up with, oh, Microsoft bought Minecraft.
Yeah.
So if you imagine like your Microsoft Live account mashed up with a 3D virtual space like Minecraft, where you've got an inventory of stuff that you drop when your character dies, and you need to go back and retrieve or regain, you know, your levels or all that stuff. And Microsoft's also working on HoloLens goggles, which, in fact, they demoed a Minecraft simulation at, I think it was at CES, or maybe it was just a video I saw.
I was watching the latest, or listening to the latest podcast from tested.com, and they were saying in there that they had interviewed one of the guys who had gone to Oculus Rift from, or sorry, that had gone to HoloLens from Oculus Rift, and they were saying that virtual reality is so much easier than augmented reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't have to overlay it. There's no...
Right. There's no... Yeah.
You're just your head becomes part of the game controller.
Right. Your head becomes part of the game controller. And I feel like as much as for many practical reasons, augmented reality would be very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think virtual reality is going to be a bigger thing just because of the gaming aspect of it.
So what would be the effects of something like this coming together? What if Oculus Rift is a big hit and they can sell it really cheap and people start using Facebook on a 3D display with an avatar?
Yeah, this was the curious thing for me, because it raises a lot of very interesting social questions or questions about how social people would interact with each other, because suddenly things like gender and race and age and disability or not, like suddenly none of that matters unless you want it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can pick a side of yourself to show.
Yeah.
Which I feel like people already do on Facebook. Like if you look at your photo stream, like my photo stream, it's not, I don't have like a fair and balanced representation right. of my day.
Right. You either have Facebook, I feel like Facebook is two things. It's either people complaining about something really bad happening or people showing off the awesome stuff they're doing. There's no average day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, it's not as much, you know, the Twitter joke is like, I don't want to hear what people had for lunch. I don't see as much of that on Facebook anymore.
No, you don't.
It's more like, here's this event that happened. Here are pictures from this event that happened. I had a kid. Yeah. We had a birthday. We had a special vacation or yeah. whatever.
And I do that myself. I only post on Facebook when I've got something cool to show, you know?
Right. So it creates a distorted version of like, you know, my Facebook, if you just read my Facebook profile, it's a very one-sided or distorted version of my actual entire life, of course.
Yeah, there have actually been studies that show Facebook makes people depressed because you look at it and all you see is the best of the lives of all of your friends. Mm-hmm. So then you start comparing and go, oh, my life kind of sucks compared to theirs.
Right. I agree with that. And so imagine if the time that people spend in Facebook, which is a significant amount of time, imagine if that it just increased and it was because it became more immersive and more, it became more important.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like no one listening to this is going to be convinced that leap can happen. But that said, in the book, and I think this is what will happen in the real world, mm-hmm. in the book, it, once you put on the goggles, there's no going back. And I, you know, when we've had the story before, not on this show, but we've talked before about Cooper trying on the Google cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he, after he was done, he asked me if he could go back in it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a place.
Yeah. That still gives me chills.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It made perfect sense because he's right. That's the word you'd use. Like you say, you go on the computer, you go on the internet, but you don't go on goggles. You go in them.
No, you go in them. Go in the world they create.
It's wild.
And you know, if Facebook is the best parts of all of our lives, why wouldn't you hang out there?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you deal with the normal day-to-day annoying crap in our lives when you can go and have into your virtual environment and do fun stuff?
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's again, I'm sure people are like, that's the most depressing thing I ever heard, because you already get that with Facebook.
No, it's escapism though, and people always find ways of escaping. I mean, you read books, you watch a movie, you play a role playing game, you play a video game. It's just taking it to a different level. It's the same thing we've always done.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, I totally agree. I think to defend the notion that it is plausible, in the book, they make the real world, physical reality, much more, you know, it's way in the future.
Grim and
yeah, it's
dark
horrible.
And,
yeah, it's like totally dystopian
yeah.
Blade Runner type of yuckiness that everyone wants to be away from anyway.
Yeah.
So it makes it more plausible. But I can definitely see, not a path to that, but I could see that if it existed and reality got that bad, then there's no brainer.
There's no brainer, yeah. Did you get the sense in the book that the world was like that because of the Oasis?
So, right. Like, how does it not become like a self-fulfilling prophecy? I'm not sure. But it's hard for me to imagine things getting that far out of hand. I think the dystopian future thing is kind of an easy way to write a book.
I think it is, yeah. But in reality, I don't think it would ever... I don't think people would let it get to that point. I mean, we're still going to care about the world that's going on around us. No matter how awesome your virtual environment is, you still have to live in the physical world.
Right. You can't eat online.
Yeah. I mean, there's still people that need to be fed and jobs that need to be done and
right.
infrastructures exactly. that have to be maintained. And
exactly. So what do you think about the whole inequality stuff that can happen there, though? So like, for example, in the game and in the book and in the real world, all of the gear costs money. Mm-hmm. Then the better the gear is, the more money it costs, the better your connection to the shared space is or the virtual reality is, the more it costs, and the better your experience, the better you can perform once you're there.
Yeah, I think a lot of different social inequalities that we have now will kind of disappear because it's a virtual environment and people can do whatever they want. But I think it's going to create different types of inequalities and sort of classes of citizens based on the way in which you would access that virtual world. And I think you'd probably see a lot of different subcultures pop up around it too, because I mean, you're going to have like these people that are, say, they accessing this virtual world on this really old, outdated technology that's the equivalent of some guy who only uses the terminal today and no GUI. And I mean, there's going to be people that are like embracing that. And I don't know, I just feel like you'd see different subcultures pop up around it, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And to me, the interesting thing is that it won't map to the existing social constructs.
Yeah, it won't be at all.
Right. It'll map to something completely different. So you could have like things like physical disabilities or that stuff that just goes away. You know, or like even physical appearance.
Yeah. Is that good though? That stuff goes away, or is it not good? Is it like, oh, I can change my appearance or change my gender at all. And people won't look at me a certain way. And you think, yeah, on one hand, that's good. But on the other hand, it doesn't address the problem of people discriminating against a certain class of
right. It's just a different people. Discrimination. Just,
you're, right, right. It actually avoids the problem that needs solving.
So I think there is one thing about it that makes me optimistic, which is that you could end up being virtual friends with someone you wouldn't have been friends with in real life.
Yeah.
And so it challenges your preconceptions around that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree with your point. The other thing that happens is that I'm sure this is true. It was true in the book as well that, you know, like, every female has one of two body types, you know, like right. Porn star or supermodel.
Right.
You know, and every guy is like a football player or whatever. And, you know, you get a lot of sort of unimaginative ideal or pseudo ideal, you know, BS, like silliness.
Yeah.
And there's a whole theme in the book about how much your avatar looks like you in real life. And that is super interesting to me. So like, you know, because initially in the book, and probably it would be this similar in real life, people who are a little bit more awkward in the real world, they're not crushing it in the real world, have second chance, kind of like they can go in and be like amazing.
Yeah.
I do think that it's sort of the collision of the two different kinds of whatchamacallit, the two different kinds of social circles at the end of the day would be a good thing, because it challenges your prejudices.
Oh, that's the thing though. It doesn't really challenge them. It hides them.
But once they're revealed, then you're like, oh wait, I could be friends with someone who I...
Yeah, but what if they're never revealed?
Oh, there's
you're
that.
Not, you're not addressing the problem. You're just hiding from it, covering it up.
Yeah, I agree. But so, okay, I'll give you another light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay.
The other one is that it allows you to, well, to back up for a second. There's a great line in the book where they say that, you know, there's these two people who have only met in virtual space and, mm-hmm. you know, what, and one of them says, how can you say that? You don't even know me. And the other one says, are you kidding me? I know everything about you. And the first one's like, no, you only know what I choose to see. You know, you don't know what I look like. You don't know, you know, there's all these things you don't know about me. And the other one says something along the lines of like in the game or in the Oasis, you're nothing but your personality.
That's true.
Right. So having a massively multiplayer immersive reality, one of the cool things about it is that you'll be so much more exposed to every kind of person, even if it's made up.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of prejudice comes from parochialism and not getting out enough. And even though you'd be sitting in your room with a visor on your head, you're still kind of out in a sense.
You have more exposure to the world.
To way more people.
And the people in it. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, well, I met Richard on the internet. I talked to Richard on the internet for a long time before I ever met him.
Yeah, I met you on the internet.
Yeah.
I met Nate at Sticky Albums. I've never even met.
Right. Most of my best friends have started out as people I've met on the internet. And yeah. And you're right about it challenging you in terms of, oh, I'm friends with this person that I normally would never have spoken to.
We would never would have met in a million years. There's no way you and I would have met. Maybe.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way. And I have another friend, real good friends. We've been friends for like 18 years now. But when I met him, he was actually very young when I met him, like many years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And
like awkwardly younger.
Like awkwardly younger in real life. But mm-hmm. in terms of maturity and thought and all that, he was just like a very smart and advanced person.
Mm-hmm.
And we got along great. And 18 years later, we're still really good friends. And like if I had met him in the physical world, I there's no way we would have been traveling in the same social circles.
Right. Yeah, it's wild. That's where at the end of the day, I hate that sentence. I've said it twice now and I don't even like it. But that's the thing that keeps me optimistic. That's the thing that keeps me from getting cynical about things like Facebook.
Yeah.
And because it's really easy to go cynical and be like, oh, people are spending all their time in their phones and they're always staring at a screen. And I always kind of push back on that and say, yeah, but they're interacting with people. It's just not people that they're sitting right next to. Yeah, but they're sitting right next to their friend. They could talk to them. They probably are talking to the person right next to them. They're probably in a chat room on their phones.
Right. It's like, that person is right next to me. I can talk to them anytime.
I text Erica all the time. House or not in the house.
Kira and I have some of our best conversations over Instant Messenger. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, you know how, well, I guess you don't. Your kids aren't that old yet, but maybe you remember. But as you're like a young teen, it's like you kind of want guidance on stuff, but at the same time, you don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, you don't want to sit there and have that uncomfortable conversation. Yeah,
but you know, you can have that conversation over Instant Messenger, and it's no problem.
Mm. So as difficult as it is to imagine a virtual reality that we all enter into, we already have it.
It's just not as immersive as it is in the book.
Yeah, it just has a horrible interface.
Yeah, we're just using it to, like I said, Kira and I just, she wants to talk about something, we do it over Instant Messenger. If we had a virtual environment, then maybe she would create some kind of completely different avatar that's not her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would create some completely different avatar that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sit in that virtual world and talk about it. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was another thing that came up in the book that I think is 100% on the money, which is one of the characters is kind of a blabbermouth. So that character prefers to do text messaging instead of audio chat to get a little bit more control over the message she's trying to send out. So there's like all these different modes of communication. And if you had like ultimate control over which ones were turned on or off for a particular interaction, it'd be super, super powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I do that now sometimes when I'm talking to, if I need to talk to someone about something that's really serious, I've had, you know, they'll say, do you want to get on Skype? Do you want to talk? And like, no, can we just type?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It makes it tougher for someone like me to interrupt you. You can see they're typing.
Well, your emotions don't enter into it as much. If I'm really upset about something and we're talking about it, maybe I'm going to break down in tears in the middle of my sentence. But if I'm typing, I can get out that sentence and sort of detach myself from it and think about it more.
Right. Yeah. So in a situation where the emotions are going to interfere with the communication, then you can separate them a little bit. It's going to be so insane to see how this stuff plays out. And it's probably going to play out pretty quick. I mean, every big player is working
once,
on
once, it. Once either Sony or Microsoft, because I know Nintendo's not going to do it first. But once either Sony or Microsoft, whichever does it first, starts bundling this headgear with their game consoles,
mm-hmm.
it's over. There's mm-hmm. no going back.
Yep. I agree. It'll start in the gaming community.
Yeah. And as soon as this gets added to like a PlayStation 6 or an Xbox 9000, we're all like moving into virtual world.
Oh, yeah. Like I used to do this in Halo. Like when I moved to Atlanta, I had some friends back in Boston that I used to do gaming with, and we'd play Halo, And so we played. I never liked Halo that much. It was okay. It was fun to do it, but it was only fun because my buddies were
doing it with other people.
Right. And so we got into this weird thing where we'd be doing a team thing and it was boring or whatever. And me and like another dude would just be hanging out in a room being like, hey, whatever happened with your shoulder, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like we would get together with friends and we would log on to Dungeons and Dragons online to use the voice chat to sit and the dice macros and all that stuff, little things to sit there and like play pen and paper Dungeons and Dragons.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, folks, it's coming.
Yeah.
Don't fear it.
Yeah, the instant it hits game consoles,
I'll be the first person in line. Yeah. It's really, because I've had some experience with it. It is so cool. It's so far beyond anything that people have experienced. It's going to totally catch on. And, you know, maybe if the price is reasonable, it's totally going to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
So, dear listener, you should check out Ready Player One by Ernest Cline and let us know if you think we're totally crazy or if it could happen. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
We hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog but aren't sure how? It's easy. Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. Or if you don't have two friends because you're always jacked into the Oasis, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. It would mean a lot to Kelly and I. Thanks a lot.